Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley. Happy June Sploitation. The month continues our month-long celebration of exploitation and genre films. And I'm very excited for this special episode where we'll be discussing the movie Don't Go in the House, as well as Video Nasties, with a great movie fan, exploitation fan, all-around great person. Please welcome to the show, Stephanie Crawford. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk to you. I awkwardly approached you on Twitter about coming on the podcast, and you were kind enough to say okay. Perhaps just feeling pressured or like, how do I make this end? And you said okay, and now it's really happening. So I have called your bluff.
Yeah, no, I felt terribly pressured, and I'm here. I don't want to say under duress, but I kind of just said it. But this will be great. I'm looking forward to it.
So, you know, we've talked on Twitter before, and I have seen, you know, pictures that you've posted where you're like, oh, this is the stack of movies I want to watch this weekend. And I've looked at them, and it looks exactly like my collection or the movies that I would want to watch. You just had a picture for Italian Horror Day that was like, here's what I want to watch. And I thought, I like all those movies. I want to watch all those movies. So have you always been kind of into genre and exploitation movies? Was there a certain movie that kind of tipped you in that direction?
Well, I grew up, my parents were pretty stern about what I was allowed to watch. So that obviously made me really want to see horror movies. So I'd sneak into the horror aisle and just stare at the covers and make up the movies. And then we finally got Cinemax. And that was like, oh, well, I'm staying up because apparently they play horror movies late at night. So I would keep checking back and it'd be Skinamax. And I'd be like, when is Skinamax going to be over? I want to see some horror movies. So my first horror movies were actually things like Rumpelstiltskin and Pinocchio's Revenge. My first Friday the 13th was Part 3, which is great. That was exciting.
That's
so,
a good one to start with, yeah.
Yeah, I guess as early as I could get Adam, I was a fan.
And do you have some favorites that you want to rattle off, just out of curiosity?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll say when I saw Nightmare on Elm Street, that was kind of the sea change for me when I started taking them seriously. And for my 13th birthday, my mom kind of gave up, and she got me The Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2 on VHS, and the first four Friday the 13th. So
that's like the greatest 13th birthday ever.
I was very excited.
The only thing that would have made that birthday better is if she also got you Friday 5 on VHS, because that's the one everybody needs.
Really?
I love it. I won't argue that it's good, but I love it.
All right, fair enough. It does have my favorite character in the series. I love Reggie.
Reggie? I thought you were going to say Joey for sure.
No, Reggie.
Reggie's good. Joey is better.
But so, current favorite?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Martyrs. That one really had a big impact on me. I'm a really big Argento fan.
All right.
Phenomenon's probably the big one.
Okay, nice, nice. We did a podcast.
Deep Red, Inferno. I know. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Those are all good ones. Yeah, there's a certain point, unfortunately. I feel like it's post-opera where I kind of drop off Argento. And there's a handful that I still haven't even seen. I've been trying to fill in some of the blanks for like some of the TV movies that he made. And obviously, I have not loved his most recent output. Mm-hmm. Man, everything up to opera is rock solid.
Yeah, I agree. I've avoided a lot of the latter day things just from what I've heard. I guess I don't want the earlier things tainted.
No, yeah, you're better off. Although I've managed to compartmentalize that in my head, you know, so I don't, when I'm watching Suspiria, I'm not thinking about Dracula 3D. I'm able to just enjoy Suspiria, which is nice.
I remember when that came out, I was like, why didn't he just go for Dracula 3D on ice? Like, let's just go.
That might be the thing that that movie is missing. Because it does have a giant CG, like, praying mantis. You know, like in Bram Stoker's original.
Who could forget that scene?
So we were kind of talking about, you know, choosing a topic and settled in on video nasties. And then it was, well, do we talk about a bunch of video nasties? Do we talk about just one? And all credit to you, you kind of landed on Don't Go in the House, which I had seen because Amazon Prime was streaming it. And I don't think I knew when I watched it that I was watching a censored version. And so I immediately procured the uncensored version. Now, it turns out they're not terribly different. I think the major difference is the one scene that I'm sure you can imagine what that scene is, was just completely missing in the Amazon Prime version. So now that I have seen the film uncut, what was it that kind of steered you towards this movie over some of the other nasties, which I'm sure we'll end up talking about?
I think the main thing was to celebrate when we're recording. This is Code Red Day.
That's right.
Am I right?
Yeah, it is.
I think that kind of brought it back to mind. It was one I heard about for a while. I think I saw it at a friend's house. I'm not sure. I can't imagine I rented it. That was a little advanced for me back when I was renting Sleepaway Camp for my birthday party and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's probably been about 15 years. And when I was just going through the video nasties, I thought it would probably represent them pretty well. It, thanks to the title, got thrown into the whole don't trend.
Right.
Kind of borrows from other nasties like Maniac. I think it's very well made.
It is,
but
very,
it's
well,
not
made, yeah.
Original. You can't really accuse it of that.
Well, because it's more or less like a much sleazier, more graphic Psycho, right? I mean,
exactly.
That's and the comparison to Maniac, I think, is also very apt, just in terms of the focus on a single character and sort of that the way that it leans into this character's psychosis, you know, more or less.
Right, and projecting that basically onto a room of stand-in of women, be it mannequins or burnt people.
Right. Right. So yeah, the kind of, and I guess, you know, spoilers for Don't Go in the House, which again, if you haven't seen, is from 1980, and there is a version streaming on Amazon Prime, which you can watch. It's just missing, like I said, I think really just one big scene, which involves the
shopping for disco shirts. People, you do not want to miss the shopping for disco shirt scene.
It goes on for a while, and then there's not a tremendous payoff, except that he does go to the disco.
I thought there's a nice tenderness to it, I suppose.
So there's a scene where a very nice florist allows him into her shop after hours because he says he wants to buy some flowers for his mom, who's very sick. And then she offers to give him a ride home. Or no, he's driving her home.
Right.
He's driving her home.
There's some. They look like teenagers, whistling at her after she misses the bus. So he's the hero.
For about 5 minutes, he's a hero. He says, I'll give you a ride. Let me stop off at home first. My mom's very sick. I have to bring her these flowers now. Yeah, she is. She's, to be fair, she's very sick. She's dead, everyone, when the movie opens. So, because this is a Psycho ripoff. So he brings her into the house and then essentially ties her up, strips her, and then lights her on fire with the flamethrower in a very graphic and weirdly realistic looking scene. Like, it's an impressive burn effect.
Yeah, that's what got me, because if you look at it, it seems like it's kind of a superimposed effect.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how they did it, but man, it's brutal.
It's upsetting. Brutal. Yeah, we get the shot of the fire where, yeah, it looks like maybe they're using a focal length thing or something so that, yeah, the fire isn't directly actually on her. But then they, of course, cut to an actual burn stunt, and it's pretty rough. And I think, I mean, aside from some of the content, you know, later on, there's some people that are burned up that he's keeping in his house, and he fantasizes or, you know, imagines that they're coming to life, much like the mannequins in Maniac. And those scenes, I think, are disturbing in a different way. Like, I don't get scared or even unnerved very often. Obviously, the burning scene in this movie was, like, upsetting in a different way. But in terms of, like, that level that horror movies sometimes work on, where you're like, ooh, that kind of freaked me out, I would say that the reanimated burnt corpses are pretty legit scary in this movie.
Yeah, and there's I think a lot of emotional heft to it, just watching his face.
Well, he gives a really good performance, you know, inside of a kind of a weird, sleazy movie, much like, again, Joe Spinell in Maniac. It's interesting because you're watching a character who is really mentally disturbed, doing horrific things, and yet he remains relatively sympathetic throughout.
When he's not actively killing people, he's...
Right.
He's fairly vulnerable. He's very shy.
He doesn't know what to wear to the disco. Yeah, he does have a great friend.
Yeah, and he really wants to know his opinion about the Matador shirt.
Yeah, and then, of course, we get a scene of him killing someone, and that all kind of goes out the window. But it's almost, again, in that way that Psycho kind of does, it's almost like he's two different people. And when he's in the flame retardant suit, you know, with the flamethrower, like, we don't feel like he's really himself. It's almost kind of this out-of-body experience, much the same way that Norman would put on his mother's clothes and commit murder. It almost feels like he's two different people.
Yeah, that's a great observation. And towards the end, when it's okay that we were doing spoilers.
Oh,
now.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. When he confronts the priest, and you finally really clearly see his face in there, and said, you lied to me. I tried doing what you told me to do, and you lied to me.
Yeah.
I'm not sure this would work as well without that performance.
So do you think, I mean, is it just the flamethrower scene that puts this on the video nasty list? Is it the title? Because, again, this is one of those movies that was never actually prosecuted. So it was like somebody sat down to watch it and then said, oh, it's okay, we can. And some of that was because they did make cuts. So it wasn't prosecuted as a video nasty. But I almost think that part of what plays into, you know, people being so put off by the material is the fact that it is very well made and that it is sort of emotionally engaging, and that makes you feel worse than if it was just like an amateurishly made piece of shit.
Absolutely. And I think it's also the child abuse aspect. And that does seem to be a running theme through some of the video nasties. Child abuse. I think if there's a kid anywhere near a horror movie, especially if it's fairly graphic, that really got their sensors up.
I'm trying to think, because we were talking via email and I had said, you know, there's a bunch of video nasties that I still haven't seen. I almost feel like I've seen more of the ones that were not prosecuted than the ones that were. And I can't remember like how many of them have child abuse. A lot of them do involve kids, but that's, you know, every Fulci movie ends up on the video nasty list because he has to stick a kid in every single one of them.
I did mean involving kids, not specifically child abuse.
Right, okay, I got it.
Like in Nightmares,
I saw the first 15. I only saw the first 15 minutes.
There's very disturbing footage involving kids in it, and okay. I think that did not help matters for right. that.
This director only made one other movie ever, and it was a movie called Joey that he made in 1986. I don't suppose you've ever seen it.
No, I know it has some similar actors, and I do like, it's apparently about a musician.
Yeah.
And the first thing Donnie does after he's sure that his mom is dead, he's like, I can listen to music loud now? Like, he's fine. It's everything.
Yeah, there's sort of a, not a, and I haven't seen it. I'm just reading a little bit about the plot summary. It's called Joey from 1986, and it's about, yeah, a kid who kind of is escaping an abusive alcoholic father and runs away and starts a band. So it's not a horror film, and yet it's almost starting from a similar place.
They do sound like spiritual cousins.
Right? So instead of murdering people with a flamethrower, we could have gotten a movie, really, where Dan Grimaldi just started a band.
Man, talk about alternate universes. You know, how can we pause this? Let's go watch Joey, and then we can come back.
Yeah, although I'm guessing it's one of these movies that's really hard to find, because even like the IMDb profile has what appears to be just an old VHS cover.
I'm going to go on a limb and say it's split into 10 parts on YouTube.
I think you might be right. The poster that is on the IMDb page has a giant, and I mean giant, it takes up about a quarter of the image. It's a big circle, and in the words it says, current theatrical release. And I feel like if you have to tell people that on your poster, something has gone wrong. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the movie, but perhaps the marketing was not doing its job. Current theatrical.
Well, maybe they did it really well.
There should be arrows on it too, just pointing to the nearest theater.
Just put it right in the storefront.
So it's, again, I don't know much about Joseph Ellison, except that he only made one other movie a couple years later and then didn't direct again. And that's a little bit surprising to me, because again, I feel like of the nasties that I've seen, this is one of the better made, sort of this class. I mean, obviously I think there are some nasties that like are legit masterpieces and are, you know, put people off because of violence or whatever. A lot of Fulci and Argento and stuff, you know, kind of make the list. And I think they have made some legitimate masterpieces. But in terms of sort of that next class of film, I think this one's really, really well made. And it's unfortunate that he didn't direct that much more. Again, I haven't seen Joey. Maybe it's a total train wreck. I don't know.
Yeah, from what we can go on, I think this movie has a lot of heart. And him not really being heard of that much other than Joey adds a little bit of mystique to it, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I guess so. I didn't think of it that
way. Even though it's readily available, you know, it's still a little mysterious.
Right. On Amazon Prime, even, which I thought their whole thing was like that they were removing movies with objectionable content.
I thought that too.
There still seems to be a lot of stuff on there with quote unquote objectionable content. I know the most objectionable scene in this movie has been removed, but it's still a pretty dark and nasty movie, even without that scene in it. So I don't know what the standards are and who are the people at Amazon that are deciding that. And I don't want to be hyperbolic. How, with the exception of, you know, I recognize that it's not illegal to stream these movies on Amazon, which is what differentiates it from the video nasty movement. But like, there are certainly echoes of the nasty movement in this new policy. Yes.
Yeah, I would not disagree with that. I don't think it goes far enough, though. I think we should probably make a list of what it looks like they missed and we should email that to them.
Yes. Let us take this upon ourselves and...
I chose video nasties because I support censorship. I maybe should have mentioned that.
Oh, wow. This really actually recontextualizes this whole conversation.
It's like a bit of a turn. I apologize for that.
I had no idea. It's a fascinating period in history, and I feel a little bit like we can't totally understand it because we didn't have anything quite as comparable here in the United States. I mean, if you have no idea what video nasties are, and I know that there maybe are some people, because I remember a couple of years ago we added this as a category for Junesploitation, and there were a lot of questions like, what's a video nasty? What does that mean? And then people got it, and now this year they're saying, what's Code Red? It was a list of films, basically, in the UK that began to become censored and in many cases sort of outlawed. There are a couple documentaries made about the subject if you're interested. There's one called Ban the Sadist Videos, and then there's another two-part documentary. I think it's just called Video Nasties, right? That one that Severin put out?
Yeah, I would recommend the Severin set. That's a really nice one.
Yeah, if you get the DVD set.
There's quite a few.
Yeah, if you get the DVD set from Severin, and I don't have the second one. I have the first one. So the first disc is the documentary, which is only about an hour. And then the second disc is trailers for all of the Video Nasties, which is like the reason to have it. You know, that's like the cool thing. But I know all three of those documentaries are streaming on Shudder as well, if you are interested. I watched Ban the Sadist Videos the other night, and I don't think I got a ton of new information, which isn't to say that it's a bad documentary, but because I had seen the Severin one, I thought there was a lot of overlap.
Right. It's a great primer, though, especially if you don't really want to splash out on it. Shudder is definitely the way to go.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we'll get back to Don't Go in the House, but let's branch off for a second here and just talk about video nasties, because I don't see really any kind of common thread throughout the movies that were banned, throughout those that were prosecuted versus those that were not prosecuted. Take, for example, you mentioned the don't trend, right? Now, there's a handful of don't movies that I still haven't seen. I haven't seen Don't Look in the Basement. I haven't seen Don't Answer the Phone. But I have seen Don't Go in the Woods, which was, I think, the first Code Red release ever, actually. And it is one of the movies that landed on the Video Nasties list and was actually prosecuted. Why in the world does someone feel like Don't Go in the Woods? Have you seen Don't Go in the Woods?
I do. I own it, yeah.
Yeah, me too. It's not great. But I can't for the life of me figure out why that would be prosecuted and Don't Go in the House would not be.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of these nice Utah guys that made that movie in the woods, just having a good time.
Or The Beyond, not prosecuted. Tenebrae is prosecuted. Now, with Tenebrae, is it because of some of the weird, like, psychosexual stuff? Because it's certainly not a more violent movie than The Beyond.
I think I remember reading somewhere that was the psychosexual element.
Okay. I don't want to give away what that is for anybody who hasn't seen Tenebrae, but you should certainly see Tenebrae. And there's a component to the film that I guess maybe people objected to. One of my favorite horror movies ever that I talk about way too often on this podcast is The Fun House. And it was labeled a video nasty. And then,
that surprised me.
Yes. Well, do you know why, though? It was a mistake. They got the title confused with another movie that was called, like, Carnival of Death or something, and was sometimes released under the title The Fun House. And so they banned The Fun House, you know? So that's the thing, is, like, so many mistakes were made. Part of it was because they wanted to keep these movies out of the hands of children, and they found out children were seeing all these movies. But then they ran a test where they asked kids to identify the titles of the movies they had seen, and they put fake movie titles on there, and the kids were all talking about how they saw those movies, and they would try to describe them, and they realized, oh, this test is meaningless because we're not getting honest answers from these kids. So the whole movement is just, you know, like any censorship movement, is just totally misguided.
Yeah, it looked like they really did kind of a shotgun approach to it. It kind of, it kind of slammed into, I think, everyone making really cool and really interesting covers to try to sell their movies. And that didn't help their cause any, because, you know, they're very lurid. And I think you could basically pick them up like, oh, this is terrible.
Right.
That's my British accent.
I like it. We can't have kids watching a movie called Zombie Lake.
Best little whole house in Texas, not in this count.
I forgot that that was one too. Right. Oi.
They let different precincts kind of say, well, if you think it's objectionable, and someone was not either a Burt Reynolds or a Dolly Parton fan, unfortunately.
It has to be Dolly Parton. Who isn't a Burt Reynolds fan? Again, they saw the word whorehouse in the title and decided it was some sort of pornography. But again, these were typically not censored in most cases.
They were going after the violence.
Right. These were not for sexuality. It was like porn was.
It really shows how sloppy they were.
Porn was a different category altogether. But then you have something like Phantasm or even the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which almost kicks off this whole movement. And neither one of those movies is especially violent at all.
True. I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it just feel like it pumped my blood full of dust. Like, it affects me so much. But yeah, if you're talking on-screen violence, absolutely.
Yeah, right. It's you know, and I'm not the first to say this, it's a movie that feels very violent but isn't very violent. And so I guess, you know, that's why it upset people. But I am now, of course, of the mindset where if I find out that something was one of the banned Video Nasties, and I was like on the fence about seeing it, or if I'm, you know, clicking through something to stream or something and it says like this was on the Video Nasties list, it only compels me to watch it.
Yeah, I think that was a very popular sentiment. And I think that kind of started everything off as they wrote to Mary Whitehouse with some fake outrage. Did you know about that?
I don't know if I did.
Okay, yeah, Go Video, they were releasing Cannibal Holocaust. So they sent her a copy and a fake letter of outrage saying, we can't believe this film, can you believe it? And they're like, this is great. She's going to talk about how bad it is. People are going to rent this, they're going to buy it, it's going to be great. Well, she took it a little bit further than they were expecting. And that's one of the things that helped kick it off, kind of.
Right. Well, and again, that movie is, I mean, that movie blew people's minds so much that they had to have actors appear in court just to prove that they didn't actually murder anyone, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the most romantic stories. But that is a common thread. I will say that's one thing, is a cannibal movie, especially if it had animal violence in it.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's like, you know, we've been talking a lot about Italian horror lately. We just did a podcast on Italian horror. Yesterday was Italian Horror Day. Junesploitation, like, just lends itself to Italian horror. And it's almost like if you get through an Italian horror movie without an animal dying or someone being raped, you feel like you've won somehow. Because yeah. Just, I made it through. I can't believe.
Whatever weird-ass bingo game you're playing, you got that square.
I can't believe neither of those things happened, because it's very, very common. Last week, I watched a movie called Madhouse, which it was completely off my radar. I knew of like the Kirstie Alley, John Larroquette madhouse, and I knew of the Vincent Price madhouse. But I didn't know about this one from 1981. And it's an Italian film. And it's really fun. I really dug it, but there's a pretty gnarly animal scene in it, and it's obviously fake. You know, it's not like something like Cannibal Holocaust where they're actually committing some of this horrible stuff. It's clearly fake, but at the same time, I have to assume that that's, again, the scene that puts it on the video nasties list.
Right. And it seemed like a lot of arguments they made would be that things would inspire copycat crimes, especially with children. So they probably figure, well, what's the one thing weaker than a child, an animal? Let's get that on the list.
And yet, I mean, as far as we know, no such copycat crimes ever took place, right?
No, I know there have been a few that they might have been like, oh, I remember this from a movie, and they incorporated that in something terrible and sadistic into something they were already doing, and they would have done anyway.
Right.
But okay. You're not sitting there living your life and you're like, oh, this movie, yeah, I'm just going to go recreate it. Because if that did happen, I probably would have done it a long time ago.
Right. But again, in the United States, we've never really had anything. I mean, I feel like some of the sort of satanic panic in the 80s when it came to like metal music or needing to put, you know, parental advisory stickers on albums and stuff like that, I feel like maybe comes the closest. Is there something that I'm forgetting? I mean, that we had the production code or the Hays Code, obviously, a long time ago, but even that was more a set of rules that you had to follow going forward. They weren't suddenly yanking movies and censoring them and banning them or making them illegal to own.
No, I think that's why we have so many documentaries about it and why there are so many people who they'll collect solely video nasties, because it kind of came out of nowhere and it doesn't really have an equal. Is just a very dramatic response to video.
Right, yeah. Which, again, you know, it kind of exploded around this time, and there was a little bit of, I think, a competition almost to sort of outdo one another, because you want to have the most outrageous thing out there so your title rents more, which maybe leads to some of this. I don't know. And I mean, I know there's a big you know, underground tape trading kind of thing going on when these movies were banned. You know, all of a sudden you had to know certain people who could like sneak you a copy of Evil Dead or something like that. You know, the black market Evil Dead. And we've never had anything like that here. I remember being a kid at like a sleepover, you know, in elementary school or something, and a friend would suddenly produce a tape, not a commercially produced videotape, but just, you know, it had the sticker on the side with somebody's handwriting that just says Faces of Death, you know, and that was like, that was the one that was like too scary to watch, and like, ooh, look what I got. I got Faces of Death. It was like the movie you dared each other to watch. And, you know, I've just never been a big Faces of Death guy. I don't even think I've seen any of the other ones except for the first one. But that was sort of the closest I ever came in my life to anything resembling sort of that underground, you know, tape circulation going on in the UK around the same time.
Yeah, that was the only one I remember hearing about as a kid. It's like, oh, it's 100% real.
Right.
It's illegal. Right. But my brother knows the guy, so I've seen it. I mean, I could take it, but I don't think you could take it. That's the only one I've ever heard about.
Yeah, me too. Have you ever seen Faces of Death?
No, I actually haven't, because I love monkeys so much.
Well, sure. No, it's garbage, you know? Like, there's just no... There's just no reason to watch it. I don't know. I mean, I like, I can enjoy, you know, violent scenes in horror movies as much as the next person, but like, I need some thread of a story there. And then if you're going to intersperse that with some stuff that is actually real, like, there's no way I ever want to watch that.
Okay. So you don't have like the box set sitting on your shelf. Right,
well, listen,
now.
I have it. I'm a completist. So of course I have it. In a moment of weakness, I may throw it. No, I don't actually have it. I remember when it came out on Blu-ray, and
I was
like,
"About to give you props."
No, unfortunately, I will not have that in my collection because, you know, the next thing I find out is like my kid is old enough to have his own sleepover, and that's going to be the movie that they pull off the shelf. Meanwhile, there's probably way more disturbing shit that I do own, but they're never going to pull off something that's called Don't Go in the House. You know, they're going to take Faces of Death off the shelf.
Yeah, you have to give it to them for that title and that skeleton cover. Yes. That was, it was compelling stuff. You're a kid.
Right. You're drawn to the thing that you're not supposed to see, which again is the impetus behind this entire Video Nasties movement. All they did was raise the profile of these movies. Still to this day, it's 2017. I was trying to find something to watch the other night. I literally put in Madhouse because on the back of the Blu-ray cover, it says this was one of the Video Nasties. And I was like, well, now I got to see this. Had it just been, you know, this was a neat little slasher. Like, I would have gotten around to seeing it eventually, but I wouldn't have just put it in on the spot. So it still carries some sort of weird cachet with me, even though I know it's all bullshit, you know, like the movies that they brought.
It's never too late to stick it to Margaret Thatcher. I understand.
I didn't even go see that movie that they made about her.
Oh, I haven't either.
The Iron Lady, is that what it was called?
You know what? I think I did see it and I forgot about it already.
That's sticking it to her in a way. Seeing it and then putting it out of your head, that is in a way kind of sticking it to
right filmmakers. I'm sure you did a fantastic job. Thatcher, this goes to you.
Are there any other movies on the Video Nasties list that jump out at you as like favorites?
Well, they have a lot. You have the ones that maybe weren't prosecuted. Like you said, The Beyond.
Yeah.
A lot like that. I would say probably, I was going to say Nightmares and a Damaged Brain. That one really won me over, but I'll stop bringing that
up. Damn it. Had you ever seen it prior to when you watched it the other day?
No, that was my first time.
Okay. So there's a chance that I'm going to like it.
Well, you don't like Faces of Death, man. No, probably.
Oh, no. All right. Well, but, you know, again, if it was like, oh, yeah, I've been into this movie since I was a kid, like, okay, that may be nostalgia talking, but you're watching it as an adult and still liking it. So there's a chance that seeing it as an adult, I may also enjoy it if I finally get around to watching it.
Yeah, it's totally bonkers. That really won me over.
All right. I mean, the first 15 minutes are pretty nuts. It's a lot of screaming and bloody death. I mean, the first 2 minutes of that movie.
Why do you need to ask me if you like it?
Yeah, well, yeah, good point.
Answered your own question.
I feel like, and again, maybe it's because I've seen more of the non-prosecuted movies than I have the prosecuted movies, but I feel like that's the stronger list. And maybe that's not fair, you know? Because the prosecuted list has House by the Cemetery. It has House on the Edge of the Park. It has The Burning, which I really like. It has Cannibal Holocaust, which for its faults, you know, which are legion, especially when it comes to animal violence. I think it's a masterpiece of a movie in terms of what it sets out to do. Cannibal Ferox is also on that list, and I don't think is very good.
Okay.
No, you're more Team Ferox?
No, not at all. I'm Team. I kind of have an issue with most of the cannibal films, though.
Sure. Because of the animal stuff, or because of other stuff?
I guess as a genre, I just never really connected with it very much.
Yeah. I'm not a particular fan. You know, for me, it's kind of Cannibal Holocaust, I think, again, is sort of a shining example of its thing. It's not a movie I like to watch. And then the rest, I kind of have very little patience for. Again, because in many cases, they get pretty rapey, and I'm just not interested, you know?
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, so I have very little use for those. Did you see The Green Inferno?
Yes, I love The Green Inferno.
You love The Green Inferno?
No.
Oh, okay.
I got excited. I was like, The Green Room. Yes, I love Green Room.
Did you confuse those two movies for a second there?
I confused those two movies.
Did and you
I
see
was really
Eli Roth?
How you're gonna connect.
Yes, right.
no, I've seen a few reviews on, but I hadn't really watched it.
Yeah, no, you're fine. you're fine. Yeah, again, you know, some of the non-prosecuted movies include Dawn of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead and Phantasm and Scanners. I wouldn't put Scanners quite in the same, or the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or The Thing, or, you know, movies that we now kind of hold up, the first two Friday the 13th and for some reason Foxy Brown, movies that we now kind of hold up.
Sam Greer, you're gonna put her
right again. These are almost all horror movies, and then, oh yeah, Foxy Brown, which again is not especially violent.
I don't, maybe Sid Haig. They're like, oh, him.
no one should see that guy. So, I mean, these are movies that, you know, I think are now rightfully considered to be masterpieces. Not maybe Friday the 13th 1 and 2, but some of the other movies that I mentioned. Whereas I... What's that?
We don't think twice. They're tentpole classics. We don't think twice about them.
Right, right. Exactly. And so the idea that a country was trying to ban them is so crazy, to me at least. And then when you look at the list of movies that was prosecuted, it's a little bit, the titles are maybe a little not as well known. Some of them still very good. Dead and Buried is on that list. I think Dead and Buried is a really good movie.
Bay of Blood.
I just messed that up. Dead and Buried is on the non-prosecuted list. I apologize. I had mentioned House by the Cemetery already, but there was another one that was prosecuted. I mean, Tenebrae, obviously.
Gestapo's Last Orgy.
Yeah, that one, right? I have not seen. And I think the reason was because I had already seen so many of the Gestapo's orgies that I just felt like, where are they going to go for the last one? How are they going to top themselves?
Where else can we go? Really? Right?
That was a kind of another area of exploitation that I haven't really explored or pursued, which is like the Nazi exploitation genre. I mean, I've seen like Ilsa, the first Ilsa, like She-Wolf of the SS, and maybe no other Nazi exploitation movies.
That's a very specific genre. I don't think anyone can hold that against you.
Well, thank goodness.
You really have to sit down and decide that you're going to dive into that.
And again, there are people who like that's their jam, you know, like they will know everything about those movies specifically. And more power to
them.
And
I'm looking forward to you doing that episode.
That's going to be, I think I have always held off on, you know, because every year we try to come up with categories for, or I guess I come up with categories for Junesploitation, and some are repeats because they're just good and why would you ever get rid of them? And then every year I try to introduce a few new ones, and it gets difficult because there's only so many kind of subgenres even within exploitation. But I think Nazisploitation is like a fairly large subgenre that I just have never touched, because why would you want to encourage everyone to watch one of those movies once a year?
It would be kind of funny if you're like, nope, sorry guys, you're gonna have to.
Yeah, it just
no, I'm not changing it.
It just go people out are that we have those free space days. People are welcome to find them on their own, but I just feel like that's too much of an endorsement if I suddenly demand that everyone watch a Nazi movie. I don't know. Although I did see, I don't know if it counts, but did you ever see the Black Gestapo that Code Red put out?
No, I haven't yet.
It's pretty fun. Like, it's not one of these movies, you know.
It's on my list from the title alone.
Yeah, it's
as your endorsement. I'll
yes,
leave it up.
It's pretty fun. I feel like I've really only been let down a handful of times from a Code Red title. Which isn't to say that I love all of them, but there's only been a handful that I watched and I was like, oh, I kind of wish I didn't own this.
Are you going to say them? Or?
Oh, sorry. Sure.
Name and shame.
Shoot. I need to almost like pull up the list. The one that I can really remember is a movie called Schoolgirls in Chains, which has a very salacious sounding title, and I think I only bought because it was used and like less than $10, and I'm a sucker for like the fact that they number their spines.
That's how they get you.
It for real. It's like, because if I have, you know, 13, 14, 16, 17, 18, you better believe I'm trying to hunt down 15, even if it's like, I don't need to own this movie ever. But how will I sleep at night if they're not all in order? So yeah, Schoolgirls in Chains was not great. And then a couple of the Andy Milligan movies that I've checked out. Have you watched any of the Andy Milligans?
I don't think I have.
It would be Andy Milligan was this New York filmmaker who gets compared to Ed Wood a lot. So his movies are, Torture Dungeon, The Man with Two Heads, Bloodthirsty Butchers, The Rats Are Coming, The Werewolves Are Here. Like, they've put out several of them. And he's almost barely competent as a filmmaker, but he's a fascinating study because he would like sew these elaborate costumes. A lot of his movies are like period films, and he would sew these elaborate costumes himself. And so the comparison to Ed Wood is apt, not so much in the talent level, but in the degree of passion that he puts into making a movie that's not very good. And there's something that's very endearing about that. But his movies can sometimes be a drag. Maybe I just haven't seen the right ones yet, but I don't know if you have any that you care to share, because I know you are a Code Red aficionado, as I am.
I'm not an aficionado. I'm kind of a wannabe aficionado. I don't quite have the budget.
Oh, God, nobody does. Nobody does.
I would.
Oh, they are too expensive.
Yeah, I'm pretty obvious, I think. When they release something like Slaughterhouse Rock, I'm like, yep, yep. Absolutely. There are some I would love to own and I'd, you know, love to see. I'm kind of a sucker and I'll buy something before I'll rent it if possible. But, you know, you kind of have to weigh these things out. And
yeah,
Tony Basil gets my money first.
Tony Basil? Like,
yeah,
the singer and choreographer?
Yeah. Slaughterhouse Rock. She has big, important part.
That's right. Okay. I was like, wait, what is the connection?
No, she works for Code Red.
I forgot that she was in there. Yeah, that's right. Well, it sucks because, like, they'll announce a title, and the first thing I'll do is YouTube the trailer, and then if it's, like, at all compelling, I'm like, ah, shit, now I want that, you know? And so there's nothing quite as liberating as when it's a trailer for a movie and I'm just like, nope, I'm good. I don't ever need to own. I'm trying to think of there's a specific movie that's full. Oh, it's a movie called Nightfall, which is based on like an Isaac Asimov story. And there's stuff in the trailer where I'm like, oh, that might be cool, but you can just kind of tell that it's not going to be it's like legitimate attempting to be thoughtful science fiction, which is great and which there's a place for, but like that's not what I turned to Code Red for at all.
Oh, okay.
Like,
it's a beautiful cover, though.
Yeah, right. It is. It is. So yeah, there's still a handful of movies that that I want from them that I don't have the money for, obviously. And then they just keep announcing stuff that's coming. That all of it sounds great.
Yeah, they've been kicking up the production lately, it seems like.
And then even, you know, dropping some stuff on Blu-ray that they only had on DVD before. So I'm like, well, now I have to rebuy Julie Darling because my DVD just won't cut it anymore. And
I'm sure you watched it like every month. I mean, you had to upgrade that.
It's a very entertaining movie. I will say, here's how crazy I am. I feel like we've gotten so far off topic of Don't Go in the House and Video Nasties, but here's how crazy I am. So I bought Don't Go in the House because I wanted to see the uncut version, and I liked the movie, and I wanted to own it and all that stuff, right? So it comes in the mail, and here's how crazy I am. I was, like, heartbroken because it's a Scorpion title and not a Code Red title, which means it doesn't count towards the sequential numbered spines on my shelf.
Your spine.
My struggle is real, is what I'm trying to get across.
Is there part of you that kind of wanted to trash it?
No, I'm not going to go that far. But it does feel like, oh, why did I even bother with this one? I could have been buying, you know, Acapulco Gold with Marjo Gortner.
I do want that one.
Have you seen the documentary? This came up like on the show a week or two ago. Have you ever seen the documentary about him?
Yeah, I was tweeting about it not that long ago.
Okay, so maybe this is how it even got on my radar, because I haven't seen it. Tell me about this documentary.
Oh, well, it's intense. He was kind of a child evangelical wonder. He had records. He was just like this little curly haired. He was fantastic at mimicking everything of an evangelical preacher. And that's what his dad did. And he reached an age where he knew it was a scam. He knew what they were doing to people to get their money. So he invited a film crew in, and he basically sat them down and laid out how everything worked. And so they filmed him at different churches, just showing how everything worked.
I have to see this movie.
You really do.
Because a weird thing happens with Marjo Gortner, right? I get excited when I find out he's in a movie. And then he shows up in the movie and starts talking. And I'm like, everything about you is unpleasant. Why am I excited to, like, he has a weird bird face. He has a voice. He has a voice that grates on me a little bit. Like, there's nothing that is traditionally leading man appealing about him. So I don't know why it is that I get so excited when I find out that Marjo Gortner is in a movie. I think it's because he tended to make a specific kind of movie, and the kinds of movies he made are the kinds of movies that I like.
That makes sense. And you see, he's very, very charming in the documentary. Okay. He himself is an incredibly charming man. And when you see the footage of him when he was little, I get so angry that they made him do that, but he was adorable. He was really good at it. Like, you could see why it took off the way it did. And, you know, that might be kind of why his acting style is a little grating. He's basically taught to, like, shout and exaggerate,
right?
You know, his entire life. Fascinating life, though.
I am dying to see this movie now. I can't remember if it was when you were tweeting. I mean, it must have been when you were tweeting about it, because then it sent me down this rabbit hole, and I was like, wait a minute, this documentary, like, won the Oscar. Marjo Gortner is an Oscar winner, and that blew my mind.
Yeah, well deserved. Yeah, and I was just watching Star Crash on the new Mystery Science Theater. I love that movie. I'm just like, oh, the fake tan and the, oh. This is not the Gortner I know.
No, not at all. And I love Star Crash as well. And I don't think I've gotten to that episode of the new Mystery Science Theater. And I remember being weirded out when I saw that that was one of the movies they were doing, just because I'm like, what? No, that's not a bad movie. But I recognize that, like, that's the kind of movie that they talk about. But so as a fan of the movie, how are you able to sort of negotiate your feelings about the movie and then them making fun of it for 90 minutes?
I mean, I've been watching that show since I was 9 years old. They literally raised me. I feel like I'm somehow related to robots. I know it's very affectionate for a lot of things, and yeah, it's never been hard for me because I've been watching it most of my life.
Okay. I liked, I started watching the new season at a time when I was very, very sick, and I couldn't sleep, and I was up for like 72 hours straight, basically. And so I was watching them all night, and like now when I think about it, I immediately associate it with feeling super sick. So I like need some distance because I want to go back to watch some of those. But it was cool because there were certain movies where like the jokes were only in the spaces between the dialogue. So it was almost like I was seeing the movie for the first time and enjoying the episode. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And the winner so far for me, the one I enjoyed the most, was Cry Wilderness.
Yes, I agree.
That, I mean, just as a movie, that is a thing of wonder. the fact that that movie exists was so shocking to me. And then, I mean, the jokes were very funny on top of it, but I couldn't believe that movie.
Well, to bring this back on to our original topic, which was Code Red.
Actually, it was Video Nasties.
What?
Code Red was not our topic.
Oh, boy. What happened? Okay, I do have a question. Was the evil speak what you were thinking about? Because that was prosecuted.
It was prosecuted. Maybe, because I do have some affection for that movie.
And I will say, there is an animal death in it.
There is an animal death.
Moving me correct.
I can't wait. What is the animal death? Like, does he sacrifice an animal?
Puppy. No, the bullies kill the puppy. Spoiler alert. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I don't even remember that. When I think of Evil Speak, I only think of pigs. And those pigs don't die. Those pigs are the ones doing the killing.
No, there's a sweet little puppy death in it.
Oh, man.
It's off screen. It is off screen, but...
Oh, that's good. Have you ever seen, speaking of Video Nasties and animal deaths, have you ever seen Island of Death?
No, I haven't. My friend Rick, actually, he bought that, and he let me know. He's like, no. I mean, see what you want, obviously, but I was misled about this film. And then I looked it up,
yeah.
And I was like, oh boy, okay, I like to be open-minded, I really do. But, you know, I know myself pretty well, and I don't think that's a good time for me, personally.
It's a movie, all right. It's streaming on Shudder, but yeah. The animal death in that movie... is unique, I will say. It's, you know, I don't know if it's a spoiler. I might have even talked about it on the show before, but a man kills a goat because he has to punish it for essentially being too sexy and seducing him into making love to the goat. So you have a guy who has sex with a goat because he can't control himself and then is so angry at the goat for being so sexy that he murders the goat. And it's the kind of thing that you just don't see in movies very often.
I mean, he had a reason.
Exactly.
Character right. Motivation.
Right. And I was stunned when I saw that exact same scene copied in the new Pirates of the Caribbean. I thought, that takes some balls, guys.
You just talked me into going to see that.
Just kidding. Don't
ever. Who knows?
Bloody Moon is another one on the prosecuted list. Let me ask you, because I don't know what your feelings are about Mr. Jess Franco.
I think he does have some gems. I wouldn't say masterpieces. He does have some gems. He's not someone I'm too familiar with because, again, I kind of go through his filmography. I'm like, well, I'm not sure which of these are going to exactly appeal to me. So I'm not very learned in the Franco
well, yes, department. So many movies that like...
So many, yeah.
Right. Again, in the same way that I think some people are like all about the Nazi exploitation, I think there are some people who are... That Jess Franco is a genre unto himself, and I think there are some people who are all about Jess Franco movies. I want to say Tim Lucas My friend JB used to read Video Watchdog religiously, and I think he said that Tim Lucas was big into Jess Franco. And I mean, I keep giving his movies a chance, and I have yet to find the one that makes me see the greatness of Jess Franco. Like, Bloody Moon, I don't particularly like. I think it's kind of a terrible movie, but it is at least entertainingly terrible because it's him doing a slasher, and so it's really crazy. And you know, some of the kill scenes are they're shockingly amateurish in terms of their execution, like just mannequin heads and stuff like that. But at least there's kind of a fun element to it, because so many of his movies I just find to be like a weird soft focus naked woman drag. Like, I am not as interested in this as you are, Jess Franco. Can you move it along?
TikTok. Maybe that's part of why I've kind of avoided him. I remember back in the whole Anchor Bay days.
The golden age of DVD.
Yeah, I was really into collecting. And, yeah, you know, you'd be flipping through Fangoria, and it felt like there's always a new page of, like, all Franco titles. I'm like, I don't even know where to begin with this guy.
Yeah.
Because he seems to have fans, and some passionate fans, but, you know, unlike a lot of filmmakers, there doesn't seem to be, like, a shining beacon of, like, well, you should start, like, with these five.
Right, right. And, you know, again, I keep trying to give it a chance because I keep hoping that there are things that I've been wrong about in the past, or that I've changed my mind about in the past. And so maybe one day it clicks into place and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, Jess Franco is a misunderstood genius. But it has not happened yet, and I don't feel like it will, but I never say never, I guess.
Well, I think we should all check back here in a year and see if you're just all about Jess Franco and Nazi exploitation.
Has Jess Franco ever made a Nazi exploitation movie? Wait a second. I actually feel like he has.
If he has, there's a moral imperative for you to see it immediately.
I might have seen it if it's the movie that I'm thinking of, but maybe it's more just like a prison. What the hell is it called? Love something Camp 7.
Love Camp 7?
Is it Love Camp 7? Is that? No, it's 99 Women. I'm sorry. I knew that I just watched something on.
Yeah, I was thinking back on the VHS.
Yeah, so Blue Underground had just put out this movie, 99 Women, and it's not Nazi exploitation. It's just like a women in prison movie. And the first 5 minutes, I was positive. I was like, I found it. This is the one, because it has this opening song that kicks so much ass. It's so great. And then the rest of the movie kind of sucks, the way that a lot of Jess Franco movies do. And I was so disappointed because I thought that opening song was a promise of like a Jess Franco movie with energy and like something to be excited about. But it was, I was fooled once again.
I've been misled by music quite a bit.
Yes. Yes. But again, you know, whatever. I was going to, you know, that's going back to the whole Italian horror thing. Like, even an Italian horror movie that maybe isn't great, so many of them have such amazing scores that it just compensates for everything.
You're like, I can work with this.
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't always get an Argento Goblin marriage. That would be great.
Yes. Yes. Just last night I rewatched House by the Cemetery and forgot how great the score is for that movie, because the opening credits are going and the score is so great that I was like, wait a second, is this my favorite Fulci movie? And
it is right now.
Yeah. I mean, it ended up not quite being that, but it was way better than I remembered it being. 'Cause it was the one of like, of his big ones. I think that's the one I had seen the least.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and so it was great to revisit it, and just, it is incredibly well made. I mean, there's like shots and stuff that, and some editing that he does in there that I just think is better than anything else he's done.
Yeah, I actually rewatched it recently as well, and it's a very bewitching film. And there's something about Fulci, he's so great at filming in houses.
Yeah, which, like, is good, because that entire movie is pretty much in a house.
Yeah. Oh, and like in the Beyond, I think that's what everyone talks about when they talk about Fulci is houses.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a house guy. No?
Okay. Speaking of houses, Don't Go in the House is the movie that we're talking about.
I don't think you need to reiterate that. I think,
you know,
it's pretty clear.
I just want to remind people that the movie that we're here talking about is Don't Go in the House.
This is going right in the... recycle bin. I know, it's okay.
I like these episodes that go off on many tangents, and truth be told, I mean, I like Don't Go in the House. I'm not positive like I can talk about it for an hour, you know, like there are certain things that I feel like we could unpack, but almost anything that we unpack is just saying, you know, like in Psycho, because it is such an approximation, just sort of updated for a grittier, sleazier, more violent period.
World with a 42nd Street, I
right,
suppose.
Right. Which, again, I romanticize that period, you know?
Oh, sure.
Because I guess any of us who like these kinds of movies do. And you hear interviews with people who were around during that time and living there and going to see all these movies and these all-night marathons. And
there's that wino urine smell.
Exactly.
There's be shanked at any moment. God, that's how you see a movie.
There's a great documentary, I think, on the Pieces Blu-ray called like 42nd Street Memories or 42nd Street Forever, something like that. And so it's just people talking about, you know, being on 42nd Street at that time and seeing those movies. And yeah, they're talking about all the weird fluids and stuff. And I think it's Debbie Rashan who realized, she says, like, at one point she realized she's sitting where all these people had jerked off or something, and she refers to it as the jizz of 1,000 ghosts. And I found that so poetic and disturbing at the same time that I was like...
The romance of the theater.
Right? Maybe I don't wish that I had been there during the... Because, of course, I would just be terrified. I wouldn't have actually gone to any of those theaters, but I'm so jealous of the people that did.
Oh, sure. Yeah, if you're not there, you can pretty much construct it into anything you'd like. You can just pick out the fun parts. Like, wow, look at the marquees back then. You could watch all kinds of crazy shit in one night. Never have to get up.
And again, because we're living in this golden age now of home video, I mean, so many of these titles are being released in these gorgeous formats, and you're getting entire trailer compilations of trailers for these movies, which in many cases is all you need. You don't even have to see the whole movie because it would only disappoint.
That's the best part.
Yeah, exactly. So you can almost recreate, you know, the experience as long as you can talk a friend or a family member into standing behind you and peeing.
If you know, if they're really your friend, if they're really your family, they'll do it.
Anything else we want to say about Don't Go in the House?
You know what? I'd recommend it. I think even though there is a lot of nastiness to it, I think it does have a lot of heart. I think it's really well made. It has a lot of interesting performances. And I guess Bobby, his best friend, he started an acting theater with Jeff Goldblum. And that right there, I think, makes it worth seeing. So I'm going to give it 2 thumbs up.
Just the Goldblum connection alone.
If you're a completist with Jeff Goldblum, you must see. Don't Go into the House.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know we didn't like end up talking a whole lot about what we decided to talk about, but I had a great time talking about all the stuff that we did talk about.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to you and your listeners.
Everyone's going to love it, I promise. Where can everyone find you on Twitter?
That would be Scrawfish. It's just crawfish with an S in front of it. And I jabber way too often on there.
No, so it's...
That would be...
It's great. It's super entertaining. If you guys like funny tweets or tweets about cool movies, you should all follow at Scrawfish. We are at F This Movie. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. If you want to listen to all of our past episodes, we're closing in on 400, so you have a lot to go through. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And if you haven't already done so, please take a minute to rate and review us in the iTunes store. We so greatly appreciate it. Thank you again for coming on the show, Stephanie. I hope you will come back again sometime soon.
Yeah, I doubt I'll be asked, but absolutely.
I'm and asking
please don't
you right
hold
now.
Me against their rating on iTunes.
we had someone recently. I did a show on Silver Bullet, and we were talking about some werewolf movies, and I named, you know, the ones that I like, and apparently forgot to mention Dog Soldiers, and so someone reviewed us on iTunes and removed a star rating because, like, what? No Dog Soldiers? And they took off a full star.
That's outrageous. You forgot that, and you're lucky you didn't get one star.
I guess we've gotten harsher ratings than that. So, no, I'm asking you right now if you'll come back, so... You think about it. I'm not going to put you on the spot like I did on Twitter, but you think about it. And thank you all for listening. Happy Junesploitation. We're more than halfway through. We've got just over a week left by the time this show comes out. So please keep it up. You guys have all been doing awesome. It's been great reading your reviews on fthismovie.net or just seeing people tweeting about what they're watching. I've gotten a bunch of new recommendations, stuff that I can't wait to check out.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's most of the fun of it is kind of being turned on to other cool stuff. And I need to go watch a Code Red movie, maybe Nightmares in a Damaged Brain. Who knows? We'll see. I hear it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's all right.
Thank you, everybody, and thanks again, Stephanie.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.